Welcome to the Back Ass Words podcast. We are the Back Ass Words boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, Arden is going to be telling us about the Kenneth Arnold sighting, specifically UFO sighting.
Specifically UFO sighting.
Or should we say
sighting?
UAE sighting.
UAE sighting. I think that is a more accurate.
Or UAP. Oh my God. Excuse me.
UAP. Yeah. Good Lord. Exactly. And I know that you folks can't see me right now, but I am saluting my captain, Professor Kyle, who has been so gracious enough to give the alien reins over to me to kind of break up this JFK series a little bit. And I'm hella excited tonight, folks.
The end of the world theories episode made me realize just how much my brain needed a little bit more of a break from JFK. Because it feels like every time we come to record a JFK episode, I'm like, okay, Arden, we're gonna have to add another episode.
Which is beautiful. So, I love it.
We got plenty more JFK to go. Don't worry. Yes. We did not leave you on a cliffhanger there. But I needed a break from research for JFK for a week. So Arden, I love when Arden takes the reins on the UFO episodes. I know it's kind of my wheelhouse on the show a little bit, but I think Arden does an equally phenomenal job. So I am so excited to learn about this one. I know a little bit about the Kenneth Arnold sighting. I know the name for sure. And so I'm excited to get the nitty gritty of this one.
It's going to be fun. I'm super excited. And before we get into tonight's outline, folks, I would just like to list my sources for this topic. And of course, every time you listen to this podcast, first stop on the research train is our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast. And I think we did it because they are not doing their funding drive anymore. And there's no ads on Wikipedia yet. So
no ads.
Thanks for donating, guys. Yeah.
Yes.
Good job.
I used Wikipedia's pages on the Kenneth Arnold UFO sighting. I also used their page on Kenneth Arnold and the 1947 flying saucer craze. Big hint there.
Yeah, we love when a hint gets dropped in the sources. Oh my God.
I also used articles from history.com and their article on Kenneth Arnold. And I also used an article from the National Air and Space Museum, 1947 Year of the Flying Saucer by Russell Lee.
One of the coolest museums I have ever been to, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in D.C.
Super cool.
So super fucking cool. But obviously, you guys, despite citing our sources and going to museums for fun sometimes, we are not scholars.
No, we go to... Oh, sorry.
I don't know how to do our own bits. It's fine. We are probably going to get some things wrong.
Yeah, like the bit. And also, we go to museums for fun.
Hey, fuck you. I love going to museums.
I love going to museums for fun.
And we are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong.
Like the bit, and then trying to clean up the bit by saying that we go to museums for fun. Like, that's a lame thing to do. Like, what am I trying to do right now? I'm absolutely bombing this episode, Kyle.
Oh, no. And as we always like to say with our UFO episodes, we are not ufologists. I have not paid my MUFON dues yet. I'm sorry.
And neither have I, and I probably never will, but I'm still excited to be here. Yeah.
I will get on the MUFON roster at some point.
And I just need my co-host to get on there, right? I don't need to do anything extra at that point, do I?
I think you pretty much get a 2-for-1 with that one.
Yeah, 2-for.
Now, hold on to your asses. Buckle your seatbelts and make sure that your tray tables are in their upright and locked positions because things are about to get backwards. Take us in, Arden.
Now, let me just say, like most of the alien topics that we've discussed on this show, I knew nothing about this story when I first started researching it, right? But very much like my experience with the Hopkinsville Goblins, I was very surprised to learn that this story that we're going to be telling tonight is, once again, one of the most important stories in UFO lore, especially in the United States of America.
Yeah, and a big part of that, similar with like the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, is that like not only was it one of the first, right, but it was one of the first that got attention.
Correct.
That was the big thing. Like, going through this, not to discount it at all, it is a crazy story. But it's not the most crazy alien story you are ever going to hear.
No.
That's not why we're talking about it. We're talking about it because of the importance that it has in making UFOs something that is in the public consciousness, right?
Correct. Absolutely. Goddamn, I love you, Professor Kyle. And so before we get into Kenneth's story, I do think, very much like what Professor Kyle has done with their episodes, I think it's important to set the atmosphere of the country at the time that this event occurred, because this is going to help further our discussion and support the rest of the outline. So for those of you who do not know, I would be surprised, but for those of you who do not know, UFOs, otherwise known as unidentified flying objects, usually not easily identifiable by the human eye, have been spotted all over the world for centuries. Once again, like our Professor Kyle has taught us, that's all that the term UFO means. Something is up in the sky, and we don't know what it is.
What that?
Exactly.
It's people who were... It's a plane.
it's
a Lemurian.
It's Mothman, actually. That's probably what it was.
Probably, yeah.
People who reported seeing these unidentified flying objects often attributed them to spirits, angels, phantoms, ghosts, or other supernatural phenomena. Let me be very clear about something. The context of the story that we're talking about tonight, aliens are not in the public consciousness, not in the same way that you and I understand it, Kyle, and I'm sure not in the way that most of our audiences would experience talking about aliens, right?
Yeah. We're barely getting Foo Fighters at this point in our UFO timeline, right? For those of you that are following along with our overarching timeline here.
And those Foo Fighters were contained to government reports,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So again, the public consciousness is not thinking about this, not even remotely, right? And if they did see these kinds of things, they often attributed it to something like religious or supernatural, right?
Some might argue they're the same thing.
Oh, the Wednesday phenomena. In 1938, with war looming in Europe, World War II, Orson Welles caused mass hysteria in the United States of America when his radio broadcast based on H.G. Wells' science fiction novel, War of the Worlds, suggested that a meteor-like rocket ship carrying aliens were going to invade the planet Earth.
Future podcast episode there for sure.
You want to talk about aliens entering the public consciousness after it not being in the public consciousness? Can you imagine having never thought about aliens before and not being able to see them on TV or fantasize about them or have any sort of drawings or anything like that? And this is the first fucking thing that you hear about it is a radio broadcast of them invading the planet? No.
Oh my God.
No.
No.
World War II and the accompanying development of rocket science marked a new level of interest in strange flying objects, right? Because this was also something that was happening for the first time. Rockets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you see how it's starting to enter the collective consciousness. Numerous Allied pilots flying at night over Germany reported seeing balls of light following their aircraft, like what Kyle said. We called them Foo Fighters, which we discussed during Aliens 101. These fucking Foo Fighters were alleged to be one of Germany's secret weapons. Other explanations for them were that they were optical illusions or the result of the electrical phenomenon known as St. Elmo's Fire. Go listen to our 101 series for more information on that. So, not only is World War II literally about to happen and people are on edge, but people are seeing more stuff in the sky as a result of the war. Not to mention, you have the beginnings of United States alien lore with the fucking Foo Fighters. This was the literal perfect recipe for our main story and our main character tonight, Kenneth Arnold.
Got a good stew going.
Uh-huh. You want to talk about fucking alien soup, you know? So, Kenneth Arnold was born on March 29th, 1915, in Sebeka, Minnesota. And I hope that I said that right. I apologize to our Minnesota listeners if I didn't. He grew up in Scobie, Montana. And I apologize to our Montana listeners in case if I did not say that correctly. He was an Eagle Scout and an All-State football player in high school. He attended the University of Minnesota in 1934 to 1935, and in 1938, he began working for Red Comet, manufacturer of automatic firefighting equipment. He was promoted to district manager in his position the following year, and in 1940, Arnold started his own company, the Great Western Fire Control Supply, in Boise, Idaho, which is where he was living at the time of this story. And they sold and installed fire suppression systems, a job that took him across the Pacific Northwest. So he's traveling a lot for work, right?
Okay.
In 1941, he met his wife, Doris, and they had four daughters together. All right?
Okay.
Pretty normal life.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about Kenneth, though, is that not only did he have a manufacturing background, which is pretty impressive in of itself, but Kenneth was also a pilot. And from my understanding, he wasn't a pilot for anything like commercial, but he was just a guy who could like fly planes himself, right?
Right.
And he was a part of Idaho search and rescue, and so he used his skills there as well.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, and with that, he had over 4,000 hours of fly time. So
damn.
He's pretty good, knows what he's doing, right? He's not exactly, he's definitely past the point of becoming, training to be a commercial airline pilot, but it's not right. Like he's flying planes that big or anything, right? But he has that amount of sky time.
That's really cool.
Beyond that, he would usually fly his own plane or planes to go on his business trips. And that is exactly what he was doing on June 24th, 1947. So Kenneth was flying from, and I'm gonna fuck up this city name too, Chehalis, Washington to Yakima, Washington. All right. He was in a Cal Air A2, which is a very light single engine plane, okay, in the 40s, in 1947. All right. Skies were clear and the winds were light on this flight. But en route to Yakima, he detoured. A United States Marine Corps Curtiss C-46 commando transport had crashed with 32 U.S. Marines on board somewhere near his eastward course. And there was a reward for finding this plane crash. And it was $5,000, which is about $68,000 in today's money.
Did that crash happen recently, then?
That crash happened while he was flying.
Oh, so it was like, okay.
It was a live feed. They were like, this damn. Just happened. There's this reward for helping us find this, right?
Okay.
And so he detours. Shortly before 3 p.m. on this detour that he was taking, as Arnold circled his airplane about 20 miles west of Mount Rainier, searching for the C-46, he saw a bright flash to the northeast of him. Recalling this moment, he said, quote,
"Startled me. I just assumed it was some military lieutenant out with a shiny P-51, and I had caught the reflection of the sun hitting the wings of his plane."
About 30 seconds after seeing that first flash of light, Kenneth then saw a series of bright flashes in the distance off to his left or north of Mount Rainier. So the first one is to the northeast. The second set is to the north.
Okay.
And at that point, he was about 20 to 25 miles away from Mount Rainier. He thought that they might be reflections on his airplane's windows, like the gleam looking out of it, right? But he did a few quick tests to rule this out. This involved rocking his airplane from side to side, removing his eyeglasses, and then later rolling down his side window. After these tests, he determined that these flashes of light were not reflections of from the glass on the window of his plane. The reflections,
right, 'cause that would like move the reflection and stuff. It would, and it was like staying in the same place then, theoretically.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. The reflections came from flying objects. Allegedly, please understand. They flew in a long chain. They flew in like a formation almost. And Arnold, for a moment, considered, this is a flock of geese. But he quickly ruled this out for a number of reasons, including the altitude, the bright glint, and obviously the very fast speed that these geese would have to be going.
He then also thought, it's obviously the fucking duck-billed crane.
Oh, yeah, the what is it?
They're not duck-billed crane. What are they? Fucking sandhill crane.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's obviously just a sandhill crane. It's just a great horned owl. It's not it's not aliens. Anything but that. Literally, it'll be anything but that. You know what
anything.
I mean?
Yeah.
He then thought to himself, well, maybe this is a new type of jet. And he started looking very specifically in this moment. He started looking for a tail, like the trail that planes will leave behind when they're in the sky.
Right.
And he couldn't find anything.
Mm.
Okay. So the objects, these little glimmers of light that he's seeing in the sky, quickly approached Mount Rainier and then passed in front of Mount Rainier, usually appearing dark in profile against the bright white snowfield covering Mount Rainier. But occasionally, they still gave off bright light flashes because they were flipping around kind of erratically in the air, is what he said, right?
Right.
He said that when he got a look at them on their edge, that they seemed so thin and flat that they were practically invisible. Skinny. Little. Like literal, like mirrors, like running around in the sky almost. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay.
According to Jerome Clark, Kenneth described them as a series of objects with convex shapes, though he later revealed that one object differed by being crescent shape, right? So convex meaning there are points going out. On the very similar to like a triangle or a hexagon. Nothing like goes in, it's going out, convex, right? Several years later, Kenneth would state that he likened their movement to saucers skipping on water without comparing their actual shapes to saucers. But, and we're going to get into this, initial quotes from him do have him comparing the shape to a saucer, a disc, a pie pan, or a half moon, or generally convex and thin, right? Using a cowling fastener as a gauge to compare the nine objects to the distant DC-4, Kenneth estimated their angular size as slightly smaller than the DC-4, which was about the width of the outer engines, about 60 feet, right? Arnold also said that he realized that the objects would have to be quite large to see any details at that distance. And later, after comparing notes with a United Airlines crew that had a similar sighting 10 days later, placed the absolute size as larger than a DC-4 airliner or greater than 100 feet in length.
Okay.
Which is crazy.
So his initial estimate was a little off.
Yeah. And they were bigger than he thought they were.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because he thought that they were 60 feet.
Which is insane to be pulling maneuvers like that. So to be even bigger.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. Much, much, much bigger. Not that much, but much. Army Air Force analysts would later estimate 140 to 280 feet in size, Kyle, based on analysis of human visual acuity and other sighting details, which we will be getting into that very soon.
Jeez, so like 3 to 4 to 5 times bigger than his initial estimate.
Much bigger!
Holy shit. Okay.
Kenneth said that the objects were grouped together in a diagonally stepped down echelon formation stretched out over a distance that he later calculated to be 5 miles. 5 miles of airspace.
Jesus.
Though they were moving more or less, and this is interesting, Kyle. I want your thoughts on this. They were more or less moving on a level horizontal plane.
Okay.
He said that the objects weaved from side to side, kind of like the tail of those Chinese kites.
Right.
They have the two tails on the end, as he later stated. These objects darted through the valleys and around the smaller mountain peaks. Okay. So we're kind of seeing something that we talked about with what's his name? The dude who got his dick sucked by the aliens.
Oh,
Antonio V.S. Boas.
Yes, yeah.
Yes. So what we are seeing here is very similar to something that we talked about during our month of aliens with Antonio V.S. Boas, where the spaceship is able to move erratically and very, very fast. Or the unidentified flying object, I should say. Excuse me. But you know what I'm saying?
You mean the unidentified aerial phenomena.
That is what I mean. Yes, you're right, Professor Kyle. Thank you. Thank you so much. The objects, furthermore, would occasionally flip or bank on their edges in unison as they turned or maneuvered, continuing the mirror-like flashes of light. And this is also very interesting. Kenneth said that the encounter gave him an eerie feeling. He wrote
almost
this
like
off.
High strangeness.
Exactly, Kyle. Almost exactly like high strangeness. You are very much onto something there. I think that's very accurate. But Arnold wrote off this high strangeness, and he suspected that what he had seen were test flights of a new United States military aircraft.
Fair assumption.
Fair assumption, but also, may I just say, at this point, I find it very strange that he would see these like outlines of these like hexagons or fucking squares or fucking decadrons or whatever the hell, right?
Right.
And then when they turn on their edge, they look like they're flat, right?
No, and that's fucking weird.
In 1947. Now,
and
I
listen,
don't know.
I'm not saying I agree with him that he saw a military aircraft test. But I'm saying, given the cards that he had in his hand,
right,
that's a fair assumption to make.
This is a fair cope strategy.
Yeah, he is hitting that copium hoard.
So, as the objects passed Mount Rainier, Kenneth turned his plane southward on a more or less parallel course to where the UAPs were going. It was at this point that he opened his side window, like I mentioned earlier, and began observing the objects unobstructed by any glass that might have produced reflections. And according to Kenneth, the objects did not disappear and continued to move very rapidly southward, continuously moving forward of his position. So the UAPs are going faster than his plane. And again,
right.
Can I just say that this is 1947. He's flying a single engine plane. He's not really going that fast, but that's pretty fast for the time of like flight being a thing that we can do.
Yeah.
So this is mind boggling. This is unlike anything he's probably ever seen in his entire goddamn life. I'm just trying to set the mood a little bit, you know? This is fucking wild.
Oh, my God.
Curious about the speed that they were going, he began to time their rite of passage. He said that they moved from Mount Rainier to Mount Adams, where they faded from view. This is a distance of about 50 miles, and they traveled this distance in 1 minute and 42 seconds, according to the clock on his instrument panel. When he later had time to do the calculation on how fast these fucking UAPs were going, the speed was 1,700 miles per hour.
Good fucking God.
Good night, dude.
That's like what, Mach 2, almost 2.5. That is insane.
In 1947. God damn. Wow, the U.S. is really on to something with that one.
Yeah. Gonna get the Rooskies with that for sure.
Oh my God, I could get to the grocery shop and back so fast.
Oh my God.
To speak on this, this is 3 times faster than any aircraft that existed in 1947. Unprecedented speed. Not knowing exactly the distance where the objects faded from view, he conservatively and arbitrarily rounded this down to 1,200 miles an hour, which was still faster than any known aircraft at the time, which yeah. They hadn't developed anything that broke the sound barrier yet, my friends. And like, that's like all the rage nowadays. Every single plane can break the sound barrier. If your plane can't break the sound barrier, your plane's a bitch. You know? How are you feeling right now, Professor? I kind of feel like I got to check in on you at this point.
You know, it's really giving off like classic, like non-material UFO UAP sighting, right?
Huh.
Where they're like that paper thin, metallic, shining the light, almost like light isn't interacting with them in the same way that it does with everything else around them. The insane speed, moving in perfect unison, all of these things point towards something non-material, right? It's not a physical spaceship that's right there in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
It's that weird, hard to even put into words, fourth dimensional coming and interacting in our third dimension, and we're getting a picture of it, right?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
It is really interesting. You know, the way that I like to imagine the visual of what you're saying is like, when you get the invisibility cloak in Halo and like it just kind of like reflects it a different way and it just kind of looks weird and like light interacts different, kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a strange circumstance. And I do think, I will say, particularly as it pertains to the alien lore on this show, the Back Asswards podcast, we have not talked about a spaceship that looks like this. We're usually talking about a Jetsons looking motherfucker. You know what I mean?
We're usually talking about a material craft, something that you could in theory interact with. Whereas with this, I don't think it is in my interpretation of the facts so far and what you've shown me. I see this as much more of a fourth dimensional thing. Where who fucking knows what would happen if he got close enough to actually physically interact with these things. Probably some high strangeness. Probably some weird fucking shit. Ugh, it's weird. I love it so
very
much.
Unsettling. Very unsettling. So, when Kenneth landed in Yakima, Washington, he described what he had seen to a number of his pilot friends. And when they heard this, they suggested that maybe he had seen guided missiles or a new airplane after being secretly developed by the United States military. They had very much a similar idea to him, right? Probably weapons, probably military. After refueling, he continued on his way to an air show in Pendleton, Oregon. He was first interviewed by reporters the next day after his sighting. So on June 25th, he was interviewed.
How did reporters find out about this?
Well, he went to the office of the East Oregonian in Pendleton.
Okay.
And any skepticism that the reporters might have harbored evaporated when they actually interviewed Kenneth Arnold at length. As a historian named Mike Dash has recorded this event, he said, quote,
"Arnold had the makings of a reliable witness. He was a respected businessman and experienced pilot, and seemed to be neither exaggerating what he had seen nor adding sensational details to his report. He also gave the impression of being a careful observer."
And I do just, while we're here, while we're on that quote, I do just want to touch on that careful observer part right there, because I do think that that's fair based off of what we've seen from Kenneth. Because, and I was talking to Kyle about this before we started recording, like, I find it very impressive that based on the context of everything that we're talking about, aliens not being in people's minds, these UAPs going way faster than him, you know, him just being like a regular Joe Schmo just flying his plane. I found it to be very impressive that he went through the steps that he did to determine his conclusion in the moment. You know what I mean? His reaction to something that should be like the way that me and Kyle are reacting right now are like, this is horrifying. This is high strangeness. Like, I wouldn't know what to do in this scenario. I thought he handled himself very well.
Absolutely. Better than I would have handled myself, for sure.
Absolutely. So, the Portland, Oregon Journal reported on July 4th, receiving a letter from L.G. Bernier of Richland, Washington, about 110 miles east of Mount Adams and 140 miles southeast of Mount Rainier. Okay? This guy wrote that he saw three of the flying objects over Richland flying almost edgewise toward Mount Rainier about 1.5 hours before Kenneth saw them. So we have a corroborating story.
Because
he's talking about the same day, okay? Bernier, the guy who claims to have seen the same things that Kenneth saw, thought that three of them were part of a larger formation. And he also indicated that they were traveling at high speed, saying, quote,
"Sorry, really quick, did I miss it? How many objects did Kenneth see?
Nine.
Did he say nine? Okay. Sorry.
He saw nine.
Okay.
This guy saw three. Yeah,
he saw three. Kenneth saw the nine. Okay.
Quote,
"I've seen a P-38 appear seemingly on one horizon and then gone to the opposite horizon in no time at all. But these discs certainly were traveling faster than any P-38. Maximum speed of a P-38 was about 440 miles an hour. No doubt Mr. Arnold saw them just a few minutes or seconds later, according to their speed."
So, again, a corroborating story to what Kenneth saw. And the previous day, Bernier had also spoken to his local newspaper, the Richland, Washington Villager, and was among the first witnesses to suggest that these UAPs may have had extraterrestrial origins. He said, quote,
"I believe it may be a visitor from another planet." Now, Arden, am I understanding this correctly?
Hit me with
Kenneth sees these UAPs.
Correct.
The next day, goes to talk to a newspaper, and it's reported on.
Yes. It was published that day, actually.
It was published the next day.
He walks in, tells his story. It's published the same day.
Independently of that.
Mm-hmm. A couple weeks later, like, some time has passed since Kenneth's story came out. And then this guy says his story.
But he independently could not know Kenneth, reports seeing three of these objects in the exact same area at the same time.
Yes.
And also independently spoke with his own local newspaper before they could have possibly known that. What's the newspaper Kenneth talked to?
The Oregonian.
The Oregonian. Before they could have known the Oregonian was publishing that, he talked to this other newspaper, the Richland Washington Villager.
Mm-hmm.
So this was published.
Yep.
Two independent stories could not have been corroborated. Were published on the same day?
No. No, these stories were not published on the same day.
They were not published on the same day. Okay.
So the Portland, Oregon Journal didn't report Bernier's story, the second guy who saw the three UAPs. They did not report on that until July 4th. Whereas the East Oregonian, yeah. Yeah, because the East Oregonian published on June 25th Kenneth's story.
Okay.
All right. But you want to know what's even fucking crazier, Kyle? Is the fact that about 60 miles west-northwest of Richland in Yakima, Washington, a woman named Ethel Wheelhouse also reported sighting several flying discs moving at fantastic speeds around the same time as Kenneth's sightings. Okay? And when military intelligence began investigating Kenneth's sighting in early July, they found yet another witness from the area, a member of the Washington State Forest Service, who had been on fire watch at a tower in Diamond Gap, about 20 miles south of Yakima, reported seeing flashes at 3 p.m. on the 24th over Mount Rainier, which is the exact same goddamn time as Kenneth Arnold's sightings, and that the objects appeared to move in a straight line. Similarly, this is the one that really kicks it into overdrive for me. At 3 p.m., Sidney B. Gallagher in Washington State reported seeing 9 shining discs flash by to the north. Now, I don't know about you folks. All I know is that Professor Kyle does truly have their tinfoil hat on right now.
Absolutely. This is fucking insane.
Dude, what the fuck? I told you. What the fuck? Dude, okay, I'm sorry. So this is like a Hopkinsville goblin. Mm-hmm.
Three, we have 4 corroborating witnesses across the state.
All hundreds of miles from each other, not knowing each other, having nothing to gain from this. The only thing that has happened is that he came forward about his story the day after it happened, right? And these all came out afterwards, but it's kind of like a Hopkinsville goblin story to me, where I'm like, you can't get this many people to say the same thing for the same reason or different reasons just because, you know what I mean?
No. That's...
And even if you did plan it that way, one of them would mess it up. They would contradict each other, and they don't here.
Aliens are so fucking real, dude.
I know. I'm so glad that we came back to them. I'm so glad that we're talking about them again, because they are so real. Oh, God.
Holy shit.
Oh, my God. And we're not even done, Kyle. We're not even done, dude. Other Seattle area newspapers also reported other sightings of flashing, rapidly moving, unknown objects on the same goddamn day, Kyle, but not at the same time as Arnold's sighting. All right? That was the only difference. But they saw the same thing.
Right.
Most of these sightings that I'm talking about right now were over Seattle or west of Seattle in the town of Bremerton. And they either happened during the morning or during the night, did not happen during the middle of the day. The primary corroborative sighting, however, occurred 10 days after Kenneth Arnold's sighting on July 4th, when a United Airlines crew over Idaho en route to Seattle also spotted 5 to 9 disc-like objects that paced their plane for 10 to 15 minutes before suddenly disappearing. Now, listen to me. Listen to me for a goddamn minute, okay? Not only is this a United Airlines crew that is saying this, but beyond that, it's so important to understand when you're a pilot, you are so conscious of everything that is around you in the sky. People mm-hmm. train for hours and hours to do this, even still to this day. May I also add that in the 40s, being a pilot, not that being a pilot now is not hard. It is very difficult. You have to be very smart. But there is so much more technology embedded into pilots and training and planes now that these people in 1947 did not have. And so all they have is their goddamn eyeballs and like a radar. You know what I mean? And this is what they are saying they saw in the sky on the same not on the same day. But this is what they reported that they saw in the sky 10 days later in the same area. That's all of the corroborating stories. We're just going to keep trucking along here, folks. So on July 7th, 1947, two stories came out where Kenneth Arnold raised the topic of possible extraterrestrial beings. Okay, so on July 4th, this Bernier guy who saw 3 of the UAPs is one of the first people to bring up extraterrestrial phenomena being a possible explanation for this. And then on July 7th, 2 articles come out where Kenneth Arnold says that extraterrestrial origin is possible, okay? Both as his opinion and the people who had written to him. In an Associated Press story, Kenneth said that he had received quantities of fan mail eager to help solve the mystery, and that nobody called him crazy or called him a screwball or anything like that. He basically became famous overnight. Kenneth's daughter later recalled that the family received 10,000 letters and constant phone calls after Kenneth came forward with his story. 10,000 people reached out to
him. God damn.
10,000 plus people. Many of the people who wrote to Kenneth placed a religious interpretation on his sighting, kind of like what I was alluding to a little bit earlier in the episode, right? But others, Kenneth said, suggested that the discs were visitations from another planet. Kenneth added that he had purchased a movie camera, which he would now take with him on every flight, hoping to gain some sort of photographic proof of what he had seen.
And he totally did, right?
No, he doesn't get any proof. But in the other story, Kenneth was interviewed by the Chicago Times. And in this interview, Kenneth said that he hoped that the devices were really the work of the United States Army. But he told the Times in a phone conversation, quote,
"If our government knows anything about these devices, the people should be told at once. A lot of people here are very much disturbed. Some think these things may be from another planet. But they aren't harming anyone, and I think it would be the wrong thing to shoot one of them down. Even if it can be done, their high speed would completely wreck them."
And, you know, I find this stance from Kenneth to be really interesting, to like be this outspoken in this regard in 1947. Because he's calling out the government directly. And again, like Project Blue Book is getting underway and the United States government is seeing Foo Fighters. But again, this is not really in the public consciousness at this point in time. And so
definitely
I find it's
not like public calls for disclosure. That's for
no,
sure.
Yeah. No. And so I find it fascinating that this is the perspective that he takes. Like if something is going, he wants it so badly to not be fucking aliens or UAPs or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. He wants them. He wants it to be something logical. He wants it to be something rational, right? Kenneth also noted in this interview that regardless of their origin, they apparently were traveling to some reachable destination. And whoever controlled them, he said, obviously wasn't trying to hurt anyone. He said that the discs were making turns so abruptly and rounding peaks that it would have been impossible for human pilots inside to have survived the pressure. So, he too thinks that they are controlled from elsewhere, regardless of whether it's from Mars, Venus, or our own planet.
Hmm.
So basically what we're learning is that there's no way that a human could be in there.
Right.
So it's probably technology.
They'd be pulling too many G's.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So if humans can't be in there, then if humans are controlling it, then it has to be remote controlled. And if humans aren't remote controlling it,
just some fucking gray with an RC car, basically.
I'd like to imagine that that's their form of like play.
Yeah.
Me, me. It's like their Beyblades, you know? They just like let them rip.
Me more, me more.
In an Associated Press story from July 19th, Kenneth reiterated his belief that if they weren't the army, then they were extraterrestrial. This article stated, quote,
"The ex-University of Minnesota swimmer and footballer says he now believes, one, the discs are not from any foreign country. Two, the army could give the answer if it would. If they don't have the explanation now, they certainly could do something to find out. And three, if the army has no explanation, the discs must be, and I know this sounds crazy, from another planet."
Mm-hmm. So you can see his, it's changing over time as he's gaining more information. Maybe the letters that he's getting are more persuasive and causing him to think that these things are happening. But this is the progression of what he alleges this to be, right? So by July 19th, he's like, they're probably aliens. Or aliens are controlling them, at the very least, right?
Mm-hmm.
In April 1949, just shy of 2 years after his sighting, in a skeptical article in the Saturday Evening Post titled "What You Can Believe About Flying Saucers," Kenneth was likewise quoted again saying, quote,
"Since my first observations and report of the so-called flying discs, I have spent a great deal of money and time thoroughly investigating the subject. There is no doubt in my mind but what these objects are aircraft of a strange design and material that is unknown to the civilization of this Earth."
In 1950, broadcaster Edward R. Murrow interviewed Kenneth Arnold again, who stated that since June of 1947, and this is fucking crazy, Kyle, that he had had three additional sightings of specifically nine spacecraft. Bruh, I don't know if I need to start studying numerology or something, but what does nines mean? Four nines in a row? God. So what we're seeing here is Kenneth not only sticking to his story, but doubling down on it, tripling down on it, and then to make things even more crazy, he claims to have seen more UAPs, UFOs, alleged things from the extraterrestrial. And I do have to ask, Kyle, what do you make of all this, my friend? My professor?
I mean, I buy it.
I kind of do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll save it for my back assward stance, I think. But I think he's got a foot to stand on here. I don't know.
At least one of them. I think that would be fair to say. At least one of them.
At least one.
So, to kind of wrap up this episode, I'm actually going to do something really cool. And I'm going to kind of leave us on a cliffhanger because you folks didn't know this the whole episode, but we're actually starting a series in the middle of our JFK series that we're going to be coming back to at the end of JFK. All right.
this is the beginning of at least a 3-part series on this, okay? This is why
it's part one.
It's part one. And this is why this story is so fucking cool. And this is why I said earlier in the episode that this story is one of the most important stories in UFO lore in the United States. Not to give the game away too much here, folks, but this story from 1947 is literally where we get the term flying saucer. Okay? So, after Kenneth's initial sightings, as I stated earlier, there were the two main articles that came out pretty quickly after the event. The writers of those articles were Nolan Skiff and Bill Baquette of the East Oregonian in Pendleton, Oregon, on June 25th. And
such reporter names.
Mr. President,
Nolan
it's Bill Baquette.
Skiff and Bill Baquette?
Nolan Come Skiff and Bill, on. And Bill Baquette here, sir. Do you have anything to say?
I'm Nolan just a Skiff patsy. Gets the scoop every time. I'm just a patsy.
I'm Jack Ruby. You all know me. Oh, God. So the first story that was written on Kenneth Arnold's sighting was written by Bill Baquette, and it appeared in the newspaper the same day, like I mentioned earlier. During this interview, Kenneth told Bill Baquette that, quote,
"They flew erratic, like a saucer if you skip it across the water."
And because of this quote, Bill Baquette has often been credited with first using the term flying saucer. But Kenneth Arnold later said that this was a misquote, since he didn't refer to the flying objects as flying saucers, more so that he was referring to the skipping movement that the objects made as opposed to their actual physical description. The next day, in a more detailed article, Baquette wrote in his article, quote,
"He clung to his story of shiny, flat objects racing over the Cascade Mountains with a peculiar weaving motion like the tail of a Chinese kite. He also described the objects as saucer-like and their motion like fish flipping in the sun. Arnold described these objects as flat, like a pie pan, and somewhat bat-shaped." Hold on to that. Bat-shaped.
Yeah, bat-shaped. It wasn't until a few days later, on June 28th, so he releases an article on June 25th, then that article came out on June 26th, and it wasn't until June 28th that Baquette actually used the term flying disc, but he did not use the term flying saucer. Okay? A review of early newspaper stories indicate that immediately after his sighting, Kenneth generally described the object's shape as thin and flat, rounded in the front but chopped in the back, and coming to a point, i.e. more or less like a saucer or disc-like, right? He also specifically used terms like saucer or saucer-like or disc and pie pan or pie plate in describing the shape of the UAPs. And with everything that we just went through, this started what is known as the flying saucer craze of 1947. This happened in the same year, and this is literally the event that started the flying saucer craze of 1947. And at this point, his sighting happens like halfway through the year.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. We mentioned earlier that Kenneth claimed to have continued to see these UFOs after his initial sighting in 1947. He is not the only one. And that, my little flying saucers, was the story of the Kenneth Arnold UFO sighting.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Wow.
Welcome back to Aliens, folks. Welcome the fuck back.
I said, 2 weeks ago that I missed Aliens so much. Yeah. I missed Aliens so much. Holy shit, dude.
They're a blast.
So I definitely, I guess to jump right into the back-assward stance here, I think this fits into our Wednesday phenomena theory incredibly, incredibly well. I have to know. What was the date? The July 24th?
June 24th, 1947.
I just have to know.
You just have to know if it's on a Wednesday?
Yeah. Oh, Tuesday. Okay.
Fuck! That would have been an amazing moment to have on this show.
Oh, my God. That would have been nuts. Wow.
But still.
Okay. But it still fits, even though it was on a Wednesday, it fits into the theory, and it fits the description of a lot of those, like, fourth-dimensional beings that we encounter or we've heard of encountering. And I think he saw some shit, dude.
Yeah.
I think he for sure saw some shit.
And also, again, to go along with Kenneth's story, like, six other people also saw something happen pretty much on the same day or in the surrounding days that were very similar, if not the exact same thing that Kenneth saw.
Exactly. So, yeah, my back-assward stance, 100%. Kenneth Arnold saw some crazy shit. Probably aliens. Definitely not a U.S. Army test craft.
I'm right there with you, except I'm just going full tilt. You know me at this point. I'm full tilt. This was aliens, my friends.
There we go.
They came here, and you folks don't know this yet, and you're not going to know this for a couple of weeks, but there is something so supremely significant that happens in the year 1947 that we do that may lead us to believe that there would be reason for aliens to want to be kind of in the area. You know what I mean? And I'll just leave it at that.
I'll even say 2 years before 1947, something happened that would definitely put us on the radar of a lot of extraterrestrial races.
You and I are on the exact same page, Kyle. You and I are thinking the exact same thing. And it's going to be
meet Morp.
It's going to be amazing when we get to it in a couple of weeks, folks. I promise. I can't wait to come back to this story. So we're not going to really wait that long to come back to it. So we will come back to this. I promise you. My back-assward stance, this is fucking aliens, dude.
Absolutely, dude. Dude, your conversion story over the course of this podcast has been my absolute favorite thing in my entire life. I love it so much.
Honestly, if you love the content that we do, just really quick, you will notice how my attitude towards aliens has changed over the course of this podcast. And it happened relatively quickly on the podcast, but my mind has been so expanded, and I feel like I know what to look for now, particularly after we went through MIT. I think MIT was a huge, huge series for me in understanding the world around me, quite honestly.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. Aliens are back on the podcast, and it's because of you folks. And I love doing it. I know that Kyle loves doing it. Mm-hmm. My professor. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts. Means a lot.
It's always a good day when aliens turn their gray / scaly / white / reptilian / mole people skin / reflective / invisible skin towards us and come back on the pod. We both love it, and we know you guys love it too. If you are enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. It means a lot. It gets us into new people's eyes, and it makes us smile every single time we get a new rating. So if you want to make us smile, give us a rating. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show and you want to make someone else smile, please share it with them,
because word of mouth is the best way to spread that aliens are so back on the Back-Asswards podcast. Oh,
you can listen to previous episodes from
you know that the Back-Asswards podcast is your favorite podcast, and that they just brought aliens back.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. Since we are doing a pretty deep dive here with this series on some new alien shit, I'm going to go ahead and recommend our last deep dive on some alien shit. Check out our series on the MIT conference on UFOs. It changed Arden's life. It changed my life.
Kyle read a book for that series. Kyle read a fucking book and put it out for free for you folks. All right? Dude, Kyle did such a great job on that series. It was so fun. It was during our month of aliens. Literally, if you want 8 episodes straight of aliens, you can go back to that.
Do it. You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at @BackAssWordKyle. Arden is @Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. On X, @BackAssWordsPod. Instagram, @BackAssWordsPod. TikTok, @BackAssPod. And on Facebook, search the BackAssWords Podcast.
What was that? What the fuck was that? Kyle, a couple weeks ago, I refused to call it X. I refuse to call it X. And then Kyle, at episode what, 106? X. Dude. My friend.
If you want more of me and Arden making each other laugh and having a great time, come on and join us over on Patreon. Patreon.com/BackAssPod. We got 2 tiers. If you want to just join our Discord and support us a little bit, go ahead and throw us $1. But if you want bonus content every single week, you can sign up for our $5 a month Manchurian Candidate tier, and you will get a bonus show, the Wednesday Phenomena, every single week.
It's a good time. Come on over to the Patreon, folks.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we'll see you next week. Unless you're on a commercial flight and the pilot thinks that he sees an alien outside of his window. And so he starts just violently rocking the plane side to side and side to side and side to side. And it actually rips open the side of the plane and you fly out. And then he thinks you are another UAP because he doesn't know. He doesn't know someone fell out of his plane. He doesn't know you're flying through the air. So technically, in that moment, you are the UAP. So that you can stay, I guess, not very safe.
Oh my God. And when you're falling through the air, free falling, just remember that the pilot is just trying to verify that it's not reflections on the glass of the windows of the plane so that you can stay weird.
See you guys next week.
The danger is real, my friends. There are pilots who are rocking their planes back and forth, and we cannot allow this to continue. We'll see you next week. 5. People who
I thought the fucking title of this section was like French or something.
I put those in there for you.
The Winnable Atmosphere.
I thought that was like the term for some phenomena. Let's talk about the atmosphere of the country. The Winnable Atmosphere.
Oh my God. Okay. We're there. Oh, there's your fucking sound bit. Holy God. Shit.
Well, because I can't do my little titles on the Wednesday Phenomena right. anymore. Right. No. So I threw a couple of these in here for you.
Oh my God, that's so good. Holy
Here's my
shit.
Scholarly research. This is the paper that I'm turning in class.
A+. Let's go. Continue.